You like that?
Fuck yeah. Did I say that? I don't know. That.
Sure. Why not? Who cares? I'm not bleeping this out anymore. Welcome to the Your Three Favorite Movies podcast, where I have, my name is Michael Dallara. I bring on guests and friends of mine to discuss their three favorite movies. It's my favorite conversation starter in terms of a question to ask strangers. And when they don't want to play along, it makes me know, well, basically anything they say lets me know a lot about who they are. And tell the good people, Emily, who you are.
I'm Emily Lau. And my three favorite movies that it took a while to pick out. Mikey's been really patient with me picking my three favorites because favorites are so hard and they always change. But the three movies we're going to talk about today, which I adore, are Call Me By Your Name, mm-hmm. The Devil Wears Prada, and Notting Hill.
Yes. Full disclosure, we were talking about this before we went on, that Emily and I met a little over a year ago, and I thought she was cool. She was a cool chick. We got along great. And then like a couple months ago, she was like, hey, your movie podcast. And I was like, yeah, you know, because I love movies and not everybody else loves movies, but I love movies and love talking about the movies that people love. And she's like, yeah, I love movies. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You love movies. And then she started talking about movies. I was like, oh, she loves movies. She like for real yeah. loves movies. So then I got really excited. And yes, you did change your list several times. My favorite was when you put two movies you saw like that week as two of your top three.
Yeah, well, because for that week, because we were talking about the difference between like the movies you can watch over and over again that you call your favorites, and then the movies that I guess are just the flavor of the week. I don't know. And yeah, anyways, so this is what we landed with.
Well, speaking of landing on it, can we talk about the first one?
Please, let's start.
Okay. There are a few times. Well, and actually, one of the movies that you picked earlier, you like that? One of the movies.
Yeah. This one is of the amazing. Movies you picked
earlier was Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
Which you, which has already been on before. So you pick something else. And the funny thing about Pride and Prejudice for me was that I was like, oh, okay, Pride and Prejudice, whatever. Right. I'll just watch it. And then I watched it and tears are flowing. And it's absolutely one of my favorite things I've ever seen. And it immediately jumped into my like top 20 easily. Call Me By Your Name immediately leapt into my top 15, maybe even top 10. Watched it as many times as I could in 48 hours. So, why do you love Call Me By Your Name?
Well, first of all, I have the biggest crush on Timothée Chalamet. Probably a common belief, and that's probably why I'm so in favor of it. But he is an extremely talented actor. Oof. What I love about Call Me By Your Name is that it is a universal and timeless love story that is told from such a particular niche. Like a lot of people could look at this movie and be like, it's a celebration of LGBT in the 80s. But it's like, it is love. It is love that we've all known. It's love and heartbreak that we've all experienced. And it doesn't matter the bodies that are in play. It's like, I get what it is to be that person, get what it is to be in this situation. And it's like, that's what I love about Call Me By Your Name. Yeah.
The universality of the love story?
Of two men falling in love, and as an embodied woman, I have a female body. I have a vagina. I do.
Right on. Well done.
Yeah. Just double checked. Still have it.
But I left like it in the room.
I left it in. Sometimes I do this. Sometimes you forget. You're like,
yeah, I completely. I'm the same way.
Yeah. but it's like when you see this young boy and this like, you know, 20 something, maybe 30-ish year old grad student, like when they're being intimate, when they're kissing, when they're being together, I can put myself in the place of this character that's totally not me in this lifetime, but it's so relatable. And if we have time, I love how the director got them to form that bond. Did you find out anything about that?
Oh no, you tell me because please tell me.
Yeah. Well, the they say it a lot in interviews, and I'm a geek, so I log on to YouTube and I look up interviews with these guys. And
like right after you see the movie and you love it, you immediately look for everything you possibly can.
Yes. Who is Timothée Chalamet dating? Yeah.
Right. I like how I was talking about the movie and I was calling him Timothée Chalamet.
That's closer to how it's actually supposed to be pronounced.
No. Really?
Timothée, at least. Not Chalamet part, but yeah.
Well, clearly not. My sister and I were talking about who, I was like, who is Timothée? And then my older sister was like, oh, he worked in Baltimore at like a pharmacy. And he was like, hi, I'm Timothée. Oh, let me get your parents' script for you and whatnot. And I was like, okay, that's not this actor at all. No. Okay, that's not a real person. But go on. So how did they create this bond?
The director... Yeah, off screen, the director had the two main characters who are played by Timothée and Armie Hammer, and he had them, he started filming them. He was giving them the impression that it was a first role, you know, like take one. And it's the first scene where they kiss. And
that's the first time they got together? Like the first shot?
It was one of the first things they filmed together.
Okay.
Because they wanted to like get it, you know, like a test or like a chemistry sort of blah, blah. And so the director was filming and Timothée and Armie start to kiss and, you know, all this stuff. And they really start to get into it. And then they stop for a second and they realize the director had left. He had left with his camera. He had left them and they were left together. What did he just do to us? But I think that's what makes the movie so real and so raw is that because what I see is like two people who actually do have this caring for each other that is so it's not widely acceptable because these are two straight men depicting two not even gay guys in the 80s. That's right. The thing. They're not labeled as gay. They don't label themselves as gay. They don't act purely from same sex attraction.
Right.
But the director was able to create this out of this world bond between them, like in this world, and then bring it to the screen, which is, come on.
I mean, I'd heard the same story about, not the same story, but I'd heard the story about the movie, something, is it Out of Watch? No, it's the Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael, what's his face? Damn it, I can't believe I forgot that.
Fassbender? I don't know.
End of Watch.
I haven't seen that movie.
Cop buddy movie where they did not get along and he made them basically hang out for 6 months before the shooting so they developed their chemistry. What totally blew me away about this was exactly that. Like at first you're like, oh, this is the 80s. And I mean, I think about the 80s and this was pre-AIDS and when I think about growing up in the 90s, I think, oh, we were so hip and we were so in allowance and blah, blah, blah. And I look back, I was like, no, we weren't. No, we weren't in society. We were awful. And then I was like, oh, God, it's the 80s. But the time and place of it being, well, it's taking place in Italy. This family, the like Armie Hammer's character is the American. He's the American. Timothy's and Elio's family, they're a mix of everything. They're from America, you know, he's American, but he's not, you know, they're Jewish, but they're from Italy. And then, you know, they know French and his dad's an archaeologist. And also the thing I loved about it. Well, let me ask you, because there's so much, I love about the movie. I love this tone of movie.
Oh gosh.
Like, where it's like, okay, in the universe we're in, this is real. This is, you know, everything that happens in this movie is totally what you could see people doing. It's not like really out there. Even with my sci-fi, I like when people are being real. But in this one specifically, like the relationship, the speech at the end that his dad gives.
Yeah.
I feel like that you need to tape that and give it to everyone during their first heartbreak.
Absolutely. And the, and yeah, I don't want to give it away, but just the acknowledgement.
There are plenty of spoilers. We don't have to spoil anything, but mm-hmm. this is honestly one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. And that was one of those moments where you're like,
yeah,
you know, like there was, even though it was 83, there's zero taboo in, and the only person who had the taboo was, oh yes, End of Watch, Kathy. Oh, sorry, I can see the Facebook comments.
Thanks, Kathy.
she came up with End of Watch is the name of the movie. No, but the movie we're talking about is Call Me by Your Name. But yeah, the only taboo was coming from Oliver. Like he kept saying, "I don't want to mess you up. I don't want to, you know." I don't want you to be ashamed of anything. And Elio wasn't feeling the shame. He was just following his hormones, really. Do you know what I mean? Like there was, that was a really, like, it was almost like shame was a side character.
Wow. I've never looked at it that way before. And I totally agree with you. I think the only shame that Elio felt, Timothy, the younger male character, was just about his sexuality. He didn't even think it was okay that he was, you know, having sex, getting turned on, like ejaculating, right. Like, because it, and no one made it taboo, especially, yeah, the scene with the peach, like, the infamous peach scene.
And man, yeah. And here's the funny thing. I was like, ooh, that peach looks delicious. And then the scene happened. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to eat that peach specifically in this moment, but I kind of do. But go ahead. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And the gift of having parents who, because his dad in his speech said, "I myself have never experienced something like you and it's and Elio Oliver. And Oliver, like yeah. you and Oliver had."
I'm like starting to tear up now just thinking about him and his, like, his parents were so in love. But exactly. And even said the reason why, like, because something always got in the way, and it was like me. I got in the way, you know. And like, oh, that was what the bottom. I got. And then it was funny because,
oh my gosh,
I watched it the second time with my roommate, whom you know, Hope. And when he goes, "Does mom know?" When Elio goes, "Does mom know?" There was a funny moment where we both went the first time. He saw it, I was like, "I'm pretty sure she knows you've been hooking up with Oliver this whole time." There's like, "Oh no, he's talking about the, like, does she know that you don't love her the way that I loved Elliot."
I never got that layer of it. Oh, yeah.
And then when he told him no, I was like the amount of male vulnerability in that movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Because
it illustrates the vulnerability of a person with themselves.
Yeah.
Like, because that's what I see with Elio. It's "Call Me by Your Name." Elio, I'll call you Oliver. Oliver, I'll call you Elio. Because with men, and that's the thing, when they have their love scene, it's so different than when they have their scenes with the women. Like, he loses his virginity to a girl. And with men and women, there's this, like, weird, like, was it okay with you? Why are you laughing? Like, da 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 da. It's like, there's this
even though it was sweet
dynamic.
Time. Yeah, the dynamic is completely different.
Absolutely. It's just a different level of presence and vulnerability. And not that that has to be concrete or anything, but it's illustrated so well. And it's, yeah. And
what I got out of it was the aspect of it. It had zero to do with the bodies that you're putting together. It was absolutely these two people, these two beings that, like, how could you not find... From each one of their points of view, how could you not find the other one unbelievably desirable? You know, they were irresistible to each other. I mean, as characters, I'm watching Elio, like, transcribe music and then play the piano, like, oh, this is how this guy would play. And then he plays it beautifully. And I was like, oh,
yes.
Play. Like,
Timothy actually plays the piano.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, you dick, you're good at everything. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when Elliot was going off about the, or when Elliot was holding the arm of the statue that they pulled out from the lake, and you saw his, like they did such a good job of showing the excitement and joy the dad had for archaeology that Elliot had too. And when he's holding, you saw it in his face. So like both of them had this genuine thing that was like, how could you not want this to happen? And how the parent, just everything. Okay, so let me ask you, were there moments, or was there like, what were the character traits that you, or characters that you related to most?
Characters that I related to most. Well, like I said, it's so universal. You could be any given character at any time. You could be the aloof.
Which moments stuck out to you in terms of like really?
Oh man, getting real vulnerable here with me. First, there's one scene I want to go back to. So I'm going to put a pin in that scene because it's amazing. But for me, the girl who is so in love with Elio, Timothy's character, and she's there for him. They're obviously friends. They obviously have a history. And I don't know if she's privy to his attraction to Oliver, but her whole attitude after they start having sex, after he's showing her all this affection, she's like, am I your girl? And he never gives her an answer, but it doesn't stop her from caring for him. And I'll speak for me. It's like, of course you've had those experiences where you're just like, because he does show her such caring and kindness and affection. So why wouldn't she think that? Why wouldn't it just fall into that category of we're an item now? And, you know, especially after they've been in the public eye, it's like, of course, like you showed me off to so-and-so, but his heart belonged to Oliver.
Yeah. And
if no one knew it.
Well, yeah. I had a feeling because, again, like, remember when they were dancing on the dance floor?
Yep. Yes. You are correct.
And everyone was watching. And, like, you know, it's a small town. You know, I was laughing, like, oh, this is super old school where you can just bike up to an old woman who's picking peas and be like, can I get a glass of water? And she'll put down her peas and go and get you water. You know, like, old school. I love that sense of community that everyone was living together. So how could you not know? Like they just disappeared. He comes back. He's devastated. And that scene. Oh, when he calls his mom to pick him up. I mean, it was full force weeping. Mom, can you come and get me? It was like, oh.
And that's another like so relatable. I don't, again, correct me if I'm wrong, like if I just live in my fantasy world of like romance movies, but that I think we talked about this pretty early on, but you have this amazing experience with somebody and it's almost like it's the pinnacle, you know, and that's illustrated by them climbing the mountain at the end together. And, and then they both know it's over.
Yeah.
And it's like
the goodbye scene.
Yeah.
I mean, two, three words were exchanged between them. Maybe.
God.
Like, okay. Like it was, they just like, I mean, that was everything about it. I want to keep talking about this because I really.
I know this. We should just do one. we should just talk about this movie.
It was so beyond because so about that, it seems like vulnerability seems to be the through line with all the moments that connected with you in an intense way.
Yeah, and how much of a masterpiece the movie truly is, from soundtrack to credits.
Perfect movie. Yeah,
it is.
The last 10 minutes.
Don't even get me started on the last 10 minutes. Don't even get me started on that.
I've never seen anything like that before where, you know, from an actor point of view where it's like, we're just going to leave the camera on you. We're just going to let it roll. And you're going to deal with this. And we're just going to watch you deal with this. And as the credits are rolling, and then interrupted finally by his mom, Elio. Like, you know, after dinner, it's such a beyond. I was actually talking about this with my sister today that so many of my favorite romantic movies are all gay movies. Like they're all between two men. And I was like, I was looking at what that was. And at least the aspect for me was the, it's, I mean, it's 2020, so it's totally different. It's different than it was not that long ago, but it still is a beyond this reality for a lot of people to be like, two beings can connect and it doesn't matter what their bodies are. And especially, like you said, they weren't strictly gay. Like, Elio liked that girl, you know, homeboy. I mean, we don't know if, what did you think, Oliver? Do you think he was in the same boat?
With the girl he was hooking up with?
Or, well, I mean, he ended up with someone else.
Clearly. I think Oliver is one of the most complex characters because he might actually have the least vulnerability with himself because he is the winner. He's the playboy. He's the initiator. He is the chooser, really. And he, for me, that was almost like a cop out. Like, of course he was going to do like the normal thing and end up with somebody who fits.
Right.
And, but who knows? Maybe he did really, as much as Oliver could, love somebody.
Well, it was, I think that was answered in the end. I think that was answered when they called each other by their names over the phone.
Oh, yeah.
And there, like, when I heard that, I was like, oh, like at least Ellie, you know, there is a sense of like, not only is Elio free to be himself, but that talk from his dad that like, do not cut yourself off. Do not.
Yes.
To hurt because there's less of you to offer every time you fall. Okay.
Oh,
it's so good. Beauty. It's so good. Like it's a legit top 15 in my life now. Like I might have to rearrange it.
Can you say that again though? Because that's the ticket. That's the golden ticket to all of this is because I watch a movie like this and you're like, okay, cool. You kind of get the formula for maybe I won't choose this because you know it ends in heartbreak. But the if you do cut yourself off from these experiences, you get less of yourself every time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's less of you to offer.
Oh my
time. And then, and then he says, you know, and then there, you know, and he's like, he one of the lines was, I immediately was like, okay, new monologue to memorize because this is now in my age thing, where he says, like, in this lifetime, you're given this body and this heart. And he's like, and, you know, at some point, your heart isn't, I forgot what he says about your heart, but he's like, but then no one wants to even look at your body. And it was this, like,
Mm-hmm.
I know you hurt right now, but don't cut that off because that also cuts off the joy. And oh, so good.
I also feel inspired to say what else is possible with all of this.
Yeah.
In relationship with your body, with vulnerability, with everything that's been presented in this movie so beautifully with vulnerability. Like what else do we have access to because of an artistic masterpiece like this?
Yeah. And one of the reasons why this movie jumped out at me why I was so excited was that my favorite movie channel on YouTube, it's called Cinefix, and they make these really brilliant, funny, entertaining, incredibly insightful movie lists, like top 10. Like they did a thing, they got a bunch of shit because they put the top 10 westerns of all time and they put Star Wars number one and a bunch of people got mad. And they were right. Like they're absolutely right. It's just a Western in space. Sorry, I'm a Star Trek guy.
That's great. That's amazing.
I know they're much Star. You know, we get it. War is a Trek. I'm a Trek. But they on their like 100th episode, the narrator talked about his favorite movies of all time, his own personal list, and in number one was the movies that exposed me to a point of view that I didn't have. That I couldn't possibly relate to. And this was number one. And you can totally, again, this isn't the typical, like one of my favorite movies is Jeffrey. Are you familiar with it?
I've never, you know.
It's basically about this gay man in the early 90s, late 80s, navigating New York in the AIDS crisis. And he falls in love with a man who's HIV positive. It's really, it's hilarious. It's such a great.
It's hilarious. It's not so what I expected funny. After that.
It's Steven Weber from Wings, a dude from the TV show Pretender. Jean-Luc Picard is in it. The actual captain, not Patrick Stewart. No. But a lot of LGBTQ movies are framed in one of the letters.
Yes.
And this movie is absolutely not. It is all of the letters. It's all of the being. We've spoken a lot on this movie. Let's move on to the next one, shall we?
Sure. Do you mind if I vape for a second? We can continue. I got so excited and I was just like, oh, let me.
I don't think any
of this moment.
So, which one do you want to talk about next? Because I just saw one of them and the other one I've seen like 100 times.
Whichever one.
All right, then let's talk about this one because I just saw it. Why is this one of your three favorite movies? Why is Devil Wears Prada one of your three favorite movies?
Because I could watch it over and over again, and I have for like a decade. And I still, even though it's, let's see, it is a storyline driven by trauma and drama and lack of choice. But that's kind of what makes it awesome is you get to see, even though this person is gaining accolades, success, blah, 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 you know, all the things we're supposed
Which
to desire.
And Miranda then, or Anne Hathaway?
Anne Hathaway's character, Andy?
Yeah.
Andrea. Yeah, Andrea. The reason I love it is because it's hilarious. It's hilarious. It's
super funny.
Accurate.
And Caddy is all get up.
Yes, exactly. The cerulean belt scene. Who doesn't know the cerulean belt scene?
That is so. Here's my favorite. The one piece of trivia that I've stumbled upon was Meryl Streep talking about how she created that character, and she basically said she did a Clint Eastwood impression.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that.
Clint Eastwood or talking to him was like, wait. He is so intimidating. He is so fierce, but it's scarier when it's down here, when it's like, I don't have to raise my voice to be terrifying. And that's the most terrifying. I mean, I'm going to say top 10 character introductions ever of Miranda, with everyone running out of her way as she
enters
the building and everyone freaking out and like getting themselves ready.
Gird your loins.
And then Emily Blunt, which I was like, I had to keep looking to be like, oh my God, that's Emily Blunt.
John Krasinski fell in love with her because of that movie. I might have paraphrased that, but generally speaking, it's like, that's, you know, she's hilarious. And vulnerable,
like angry. And her character is so much more depth. And then when she finds out, I love it when she's in the hospital. And it just starts.
You don't deserve, you eat cogs, for God's sake.
So did you relate to Andy? Was that the character you related to the most?
I grew up wanting to be Andy, really. And I did work instead of being Miranda. Well, that position has already been taken in my life, and I'll let you guess who that is. But if I can jump forward to the scene with Miranda.
We jump around as much as you want.
Awesome. The scene where she just got told by her husband that he's not coming to Paris to dine with them at like the big event.
She doesn't have the makeup on.
That was Meryl Streep's idea, was to go makeupless for that scene.
Oh, really? Because that was when that scene started, and the camera cut to her, and Hathaway was like, oh, you know, was surprised by her being in the room, and you could tell everything was different, and that was like, oh, this is Meryl Streep's, you know, this is the Oscar scene in the movie for her, where she opens the window, she cracks the window vulnerability, and then slams it shut.
Brilliantly,
in two breaths, she breathes it in, does, and then bang, back down. We can cancel everything. Why? It was like, ooh,
yeah.
Ooh.
Why would we do that?
And then Anne Hathaway, that look in her face of like the first time it really clicks, like, oh, that's terrifying. Like, is this is the person. To a degree, do you think it was this is the person I'm turning into, or did she realize that yet?
I think, did she realize it yet? I think at that moment she was just shocked for Miranda because she was so there for her. I think it wasn't until she chose to leave in that final limousine scene that she was like, actually how quick it was for her to choose and how immediately she chose.
Yeah. Just got out of the car and turned around.
Yeah, Yep.
Throw away your phone, yep. Which I loved in 2006. You could throw away your phone as a symbolic gesture, but then you're like, how the fuck am I going to get a, am I going to get an Uber to the airport and book my tickets?
Blackberry. Yeah. Blackberry.
It looked like a controller for a video game. It was so huge. So what were the character, like, were there character traits? Were there things that, like, what connected you aside from it being super funny? Because the funny is key, but what is it about the way the character, like, were there characters, were there the moments, the characters that connect to you so personally that you do want to see it over and over, that you can watch it 1,000 times, that you've memorized all the lines?
Can we talk about Stanley Tucci's character? Yes. Yes. So his ability to, for me, that scene where he's like, you to Andy, you have the job that a million girls would kill for, and she doesn't get it. She just thinks that blah, she has a fashion internship. And when he tells the story,
I think it's not even a fashion internship to her. It's just a fucking internship that I need on my resume
to get to the next thing, which is better.
And that was that scene when he, oh man, when he does the, like, you have no idea what this magazine means to people, and then says,
a beacon of hope.
Yeah, yeah. For a boy who faked going to practice, but was actually, you know, what was the line? You know the movie.
Yeah, who faked going to, like, play sports practice and, like, was in the attic or under the cover secretly reading the pages of Runway, the magazine. That
for me, because I'm full disclosure, as I'm watching, I'm just like, Andy's right. Like, she's being totally superior right now, but she's right. Like, to me, fashion's dumb. And then as soon as he gave that monologue, I was like, oh, I am wrong. I am wrong. I am wrong. I get it. I can see this is the value. This is it. And when he said they're artists, there were great artists have crossed through these pages. And I was like, he's absolutely right.
Yep. Which is it is accentuated. It's really made clear in the scene with the cerulean belt. It's like, Miranda says to Andy, you think you're making choices that are free from the things that the people in this room have chosen for you. Like, the people in this room have handpicked what you think is just a throwaway choice. Like, I'm going to buy this ugly sweater. And it gives you the whole history of, like, for, not to make it too dramatic, but it is, it's like what drives the world, like this entire industry, this entire art form. So many people don't realize that their lives are led by these people. And as vapid and as cruel and ruthless as they may be, they're where they are because of sacrifices they've made, choices they've made, and what they're willing to be.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this question. Because, I texted you last night, full disclosure to anyone who might be watching. When I was watching it, it was the scenes where... I could not talk about, like, I am allergic in movies when there's, like, a character who has an ambition and they're going after the ambition and they start losing their friends because they're changing and they're having the success. For instance, the boyfriend being all mad, like.
Not that anybody could relate in real life.
Yeah. Oh, you're being successful and you're all changing.
Yeah.
Mm. And it made me mad when he's like, I became the sous chef at the Oak Room in Boston. It's like, yeah, but if you had become, you know, not that what's his face is a monster, but like if Thomas Keller was like, oh, I need you to be my right hand man at the French Laundry or at Per Se in New York. Like if Dave Chang was like, I need you to be my guy here in New York, he would be just as Miranda is to Adrian, what's his face? And he would just take. But because it's to his significant other and like, oh, your friends are all, you know, you're losing all your friends and da da da. And I'm just like, and I'm watching it just like, okay, eventually she had to choose. But I get really mad when it's like, look, there's this thing that you want to do and it's going to cost. It can.
Well, and that's why the unique spotlight on the fashion industry in particular is so cool. Cause I'm sure you could apply it to cooking, being a chef, you could apply it to being an artist as one of her other friends is, but the fashion industry is so powerful, notoriously known for being vapid and, you know, just like ridiculous and like that's because that's the thing. It's like, does it have value? Do we value it? Should we value it? Right. Is it inherently valuable? Like, there is no, just like any art, there is no concrete answer. It's just some, for one reason or another, we have made it valuable. We do value it. And what are you going to, like, who are you going to be in the pond?
Ooh. And so what is your answer?
Who are you going to be in the pond? This is so lame. Is it, I was going to say be yourself, but who are you going to be in the pond?
I love it.
Huh. Be yourself.
Well, I mean, that's kind of, but that's what we got from a homegirl from Anne Hathaway. In that moment in the car, she went, when Miranda straight up was like, you've already done it.
You've already, you
know,
yep.
You've already, you know, been as cruel as you just saw me be. And I love how Anne Hathaway the whole time was like, I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice. And to have Miranda straight up like, you had a choice. And you chose that. Yeah, and then she'd be like, oh, wait, I'm not who I don't want to be. But then she was herself. Like, then she did the type of reporting she wanted to do. I like how right after I told you how much I like The Mentalist, of course, he turns out to be a douche.
Oh, you hadn't seen that yet.
No. Yeah. I was just like, come on, why wouldn't you hook up with that dude? At least just hook up, enjoy it. And she did. And and I love how, to me, the most attractive she was her walk of shame that morning. She,
well, and the, I and like the pale cool girls
thing of, lots of with dark eye makeup.
She did look with that bustier absolutely gorgeous. And also, I'm not your baby. Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say this right now. I love Anne Hathaway. I don't know what happened in the world that made people not want to like her, but everyone was wrong from the beginning. Princess Diaries on. I've been a huge fan. I haven't even seen Interstellar, but I have seen the monologue that everybody makes fun of about her love thing. But guess what? Christopher Nolan was like, yeah, that's what the whole movie's about. So who are you mad at, her or Christopher Nolan? Like, anyway, Anne Hathaway fan, was psyched to watch the movie. And yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about why you love it so much?
I think we covered pretty much. Okay. I mean, yeah,
cool. Very good.
Everything. Okay. Yep.
So let's move on to movie number three. This is great. This is absolutely one of my favorite movies of all time. Why did you choose Notting Hill?
It's another movie that I've been watching for over a decade, actually, that is so witty, so artistically brilliant, so well filmed, so like relatable. And so do you know how Notting Hill, the script for Notting Hill, came about?
Go on.
Yes. The director or the writer. Yes. They're two different people. The writer was contemplating, I think, like at Christmas or some like family holiday, what it would be like if he brought someone home as his date who was incredibly famous, and like how his family would react. And therein was birthed
the whole movie.
Exactly. What are your friends going to say? Yeah.
And of course, I love that everyone loves the one person who doesn't recognize her. He just walks in. He's like, hey, what's up? Nice to meet you.
You make
movies?
Okay,
well then. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the whole, like, we could totally be best friends and we could go shopping. It's so good.
Yep. And when they all,
No, go ahead.
I wonder how they scripted this in the actual script is when they say goodbye, bye, you know, for after dinner, they shut the door and then they all squeal and he goes, They always do that when I leave. I hate it. You know, how did they script that squeal? And like, just, it's something that is so organic that I wonder how they even relate it to the actors.
There's so many things in that movie where, like, I will always be like, you know, question, Horse and Hounds? Like Horse Hounds magazine. I will always, are there any horses in this? Are there any hounds? No. Why?
Yeah.
Space. I mean, I don't love British comedy. I really don't. Like, there's certain British comedies that I think are great. But on the whole, it's actually why I don't love most British stand-up comics. Why I don't like I've never been a huge Monty Python fan, but I love each one of them individually, and it makes me laugh hearing them talk about Monty Python. But if you put on a sketch, I'll just be like, okay, like I'm cool. There's something about this movie where there's like a heart to it and an earnestness in all the characters. Like no one's trying to do any harm. It's just everyone's just living their life. And they're not like, I don't know. I thought the scene where he catches the guy stealing the book,
mm-hmm.
and the way he makes him give up the book, that's some high level Hugh Grant awesomeness. Although I was told that he said like About a Boys is the closest thing to him as in real life.
Mm.
So like the charming
womanizer.
Well, yeah. Well, that kind of asshole is more of who he is. But like him in Notting Hill is just, it's just so great. It's so like,
yeah, diffident. That's, I looked up that word when I heard it, someone call him that in the movie, but that perfectly describes like sort of ineffectual, shy, like insecure, the thing they always make fun of Hugh Grant for, placed next to this powerhouse woman who is like so seasoned in her industry and also learning to be just a girl.
Oh, come on. It's one of the greatest monologues ever. Actually, there was when COVID started, the shutdown started, one of the casting directors did this thing that was like opposite gender monologue. Do a monologue from, you know, someone of not your sex. And I picked the but I'm also just a girl standing in front of a woman. You love her?
Yeah.
And it was so funny. It's the most fun thing I ever did because it was like, this is one of my favorite scenes ever. And that scene when he's relaying it to his friends and the camera's panning across the show, all their reactions.
Yeah.
And then,
At the end,
when he looks up and he's like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
And then the whole chase scene of the music.
Oh,
I love you when he stops traffic.
Yeah.
I just watched Snowden. Have you seen mm-hmm. it? It's very good. Very, very good. I think it's Oliver Stone's best movie, easily. That and Nixon are my two favorites. But what was funny to me is that there's a character in Snowden. This guy worked for the CIA and he was cold-blooded and there was something creepy about him and awful and just dark. And I was like, well, that guy looks so familiar. It's the wacky friend. His roommate.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, cool. Whoa! Like, look at you, man. You're killing it. If you're going to be this guy, too. So is there anything else about this movie that you super connect to?
I think the thing you said about just the lines and the way that they're delivered, like, I thought the real low point was the peaches soaked in honey, like the way that they literally just sort of like these words tumble out of them and aren't just these scripted, I'm a pretty girl, you know, like it's so easy to adore and enjoy like this, yeah, this script world. Yes, this world, sorry, my brain's going, I'm like like running out of words. When each of these movies could be a whole podcast. That's the thing. They're right. So rich. Right.
Well, I guess the thing that I'm trying to get to is if you, without naming each of the movies and without going into the technical aspects of it, like, I mean, obviously, because it's fun. I mean, I love talking about that part of the movie, of movies. But what it is... like in terms of the story that brings you back and to each one of these, like, is there a through line? Is there something stands out with each one of these three?
I think we kind of said it for each one, but vulnerability. And it's not like vulnerability in all of its facets, like the vulnerability of intense joy, of intense like insecurity, of just all of it. Like it's, and they're all so enjoyable. Like I don't really like movies where I have to like grit my teeth and get through it. Like there are amazing movies out there, but I don't, you know, want to watch someone get curb stomped. Like, a la American History X. But it's just like these amazing movies. Yeah.
Away or walk out of the room when I know it's coming.
Yeah, or Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. Certain parts that I can walk away from.
Yeah, exactly. But these movies I could put on at any time and just like really enjoy them for the masterpieces, in my point of view, that they are.
Yeah.
So,
well, they are. Each one of these are perfect. They're perfect movies. They really are. Yeah. Like my best friend and I in high school, we laughed because we were these two dudes who played sports, but like it wasn't even secretly, we would just go see every romantic comedy that would come out. We still get excited for romantic comedies. I don't think Devil Wears Prada is a romantic comedy. It has elements of romance, but that has more to do with a young woman's it's not really coming of age either, but just more of like who she is and what she's about.
Yeah.
Marco.
Marco.
Yes, Marco. Episode 2 has officially not actually this is episode 5. I'm going to put out all the other ones, but I wanted to. Marco is a filmmaker we're friends with who is pretty extraordinary.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredibly talented.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. They did you see the thing they just put out?
Which one?
The Holidays Mean to Me thing.
Yeah.
Hope's in it, and she taped it, and like that thing was put together like that. So kudos to you, my man. So we've reached the point in the podcast where I kind of turn it back on the guest.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ask about what are your three favorite movies to anybody is because it tells me everything about the person I'm talking to without them knowing they're talking about themselves. So in these movies, mm-hmm. that's why I kept saying, well, what connects you to it? What's the thing with you and the vulnerability, the being yourself? You know, what's interesting to me about all these movies is that there's a brilliant, undeniably talented person in each one of these movies. You know, I mean, Notting Hill, Julie Roberts is clearly a star. I mean, that's her gig. But in Call Me By Your Name, everyone is brilliant. Single person in that, even the women who are taking care of the house were brilliant. But the thread that I do see, like vulnerability in all its aspects. And you even said it, like, yeah, there are some movies that are great, but I'm not going to put them in my top three because I just don't feel like watching someone's head explode.
Nope.
You know?
Nope. No, thank you.
Right. And like, there's to you, like, yeah, when we met, I was like, oh, this person is just who she is. Like, it was one of the reasons why I was so attracted to you as a friend. Just like, oh my God, she's just beautiful. And what's been really great in the last year is watching you move to the space of like, yeah, I am. And it's kind of cool. Like it actually that's one of the things that hit me last night. Cause I was like, I know I texted you and you're probably asleep, but when I was watching Devil Wears Prada, when Andy, when Andy gets the, it was basically from the moment of the interview on. I mean, talking to the boyfriend, I was kind of like, yeah, we could make it work. I was like, dude, now you're going away for your gig. And you're like, yeah. That whole thing was too messy.
He said they might have bread in Pittsburgh or whatever, Pennsylvania, whatever his line was. So there was still a little room. But it was definitely like, happy ending for them.
Hint of a happy ending of like, we can make this work. And I was just kind of like, or you could, you know, find someone who completely supports you and doesn't judge you. But anyway, after that moment, when he had the interview, when she had the job interview, and then she called Emily Blunt, and then she saw Miranda across the street.
Well, just sorry, I feel the need to defend him for just a moment. I do appreciate. Well, I guess that's not really allowance then. He just kept pointing out where she wasn't choosing, but that wasn't, you know, again, yeah. So got clarity on that for myself. Continue.
I mean, again, like there are very few movies out there that are going to be, you know, especially in a movie, in a Hollywood movie starring Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway and you know, and Adrian Grenier couldn't have been hotter in the universe, you know, in Hollywood at that point. You weren't going to have an extraordinarily different point of view of romance.
And that was early 2000s, I think. So,
yeah,
so it's amazing. Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of one of the things I loved about watching all of them again was, the vulnerability they showed and the joy. And that was kind of the thing was like how you said, like when I think of you as a friend, it's not, you know, I do think of joy. I think someone who, even in the times I've seen you put your walls up, you weren't that great at it.
Thank you. And that's the fucking deal, right? And I actually just had a conversation about this before coming on to this amazing podcast with you is
sorry.
And
not laugh.
I know. It's the fight between the strong, independent woman, the shy, insecure girl who desires love, but doesn't know if she deserves it or even has it for herself. And then who desires so badly to be accepted, acknowledged, successful, finding her way to herself. And like, I know I'm talking like about myself in the third person, but like acknowledging, being willing to acknowledge. Yeah. Like,
and you are talking about you.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, okay, first of all, universe, consciousness, thank you. And yeah, fuck man, if we all acknowledged ourselves, I'll talk about it. If I acknowledge myself, like, how much greater would the world fucking be?
Yeah. And also, and I gotta point this out, how much greater is the world now that you've acknowledged what you've had in the time I've known you? Like, I'm not even looking at what more, because there is more, obviously, because you're one of the most relentless people I know when it comes to this. But for reals, like watching you change from the person I met to the person you are now and the person you are demanding of yourself to be, it's made my life a lot better. It's made me happier that there's someone like you walking on the planet. I mean, to a degree, you're a lot like, I mean, you're very much like, Notting Hill. How could you not see Notting Hill? But like, and Devil Wears Prada, there are tons of people who have seen that movie, but Call Me By Your Name, that was like meeting you. That's like knowing you. Like knowing this movie exists is like knowing you. It's amazing. And I'm like, because I knew of the movie. I knew of it. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, when you in all the iterations of your list, it was always the first one. So I was like, that's got to be good. Like it's something about this movie. And then, I mean, the pace, everything about it just wrecked me. And that's like kind of the gift of like, that's the gift of you is of like, man, when someone gets to know you and all of those things, like you are all of those things and none of those things are bad nor good. And when you just be them without judgment, which is kind of what I loved about all these characters, like Julie Roberts at the end of the movie, she lowered all her barriers. I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy and gave it her best and walked away, was like, okay, I gave my shot, he doesn't want to love me, that's fine. And then suddenly he races across the thing and, you know, I'm with Blockbuster Video, movies are a business, you know, where's the thing, and calls on him for the last question, and that's so cute. He's like, no, let him ask another question, go ahead. I would say yes.
Wow.
And then Elvis Costello's voice starts coming on and everyone's taking the pictures and it's just them. But that was another another moment in the movie, at least for me, that someone just was like, kind of, she was herself. She lowered all her barriers and she ended up actually getting something better than what she even hoped for. So that is my wish for you. And it's not even a wish because you're already creating it. You create it every time we talk. And I thank you for these movies. I love them. I really love them. I mean, one of them I already loved. One of them I knew I was going to love. The other one blew my mind so hard. If anyone is out there and you're thinking about watching a movie, Call Me by Your Name. Absolutely,
yeah.
Pure magic masterpiece of anything I want to see in the world.
Yeah, or just listen to the soundtrack, because Mikey, we could have like, anyways, I could geek out. I could so geek good. Out it's so bad, so bad.
It's Hope's favorite song, the one they played when they were at the mountains.
Oh yeah,
and
let me. Yeah.
And she told me that, and I was like, okay, cool. And you know how I feel about music. And then when it hit in the movie, I was like, if this was already your favorite song, this is just now it's your favorite song for lifetimes. It hits perfectly.
There's that song, and there's this other song on the thing that's like classical, but it hits hard. So I like get to crump to this classical song that's in my favorite movie.
I know what you're talking about.
And then they really go for it. And it's like, what fucking contemporary composer, genius, came up with, like, again. And also I think one of the primary composers on the album is female. And again, just like so much adoration, so much admiration. So much gratitude that it's fucking in the world. So
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I know I didn't realize this is gonna be about me and like.
Yeah, this is the sort of turn that that's the whole podcast is that my friends like I love finding out what their three favorite movies are because it's so funny. Episode 3 is with Sarah Watt, and the three she gave me, and it made me laugh so hard. How perfect is this? Gangs of New York, Pulp Fiction, Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah. How Sarah Watt are those movies? I was like, Bill the Butcher. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you are a badass. Like, you are a fucking badass.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This was.
Yeah. Thank you. Such a gift. I was just going to say, if I ever have a bad day or if I ever doubt myself, I'm going to go back and fucking rewatch.
Well, I would watch one of these three movies. I don't know how you'd feel bad about it. Well, see, these are great three. But it was so funny with Natalie's three. One of them was so like, you like that movie?
Yep. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But the reason for it was, I think, what made it.
I will put the episode out, and that is actually the most magical moment of the whole podcast is when we get to that of like, here's why I love it. And it was like, oh, I get it. And that does say everything about you. There you go. Well, thank you very much. Enjoy your dinner.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to end the podcast. I'm going to hit the button that says end the podcast. Thanks for listening or watching. I appreciate it. And I don't have an ending for the podcast yet.
Thanks, Mikey.
That'll work.